I am done. I'm done. I never want to watch another documentary about it. I don't give a f-. All right.
Okay.
Let's go.
I'm ready. I'm here.
Aliens at the Pentagon, Tony. Aliens at the Pentagon. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but apparently there's aliens running around the Pentagon, according to the title of this documentary.
I was deeply concerned when I saw the headlines, and I'm glad you alerted me to this because, boy, howdy, did I need to see this.
We both did. We didn't know it. Full apology coming for those of you who saw. We'll get to that. There's a lot to digest here about this documentary, Aliens at the Pentagon, which I mea culpa, I'll take the blame. I saw a tweet by Nick Pope, and we'll get to that, and we'll get to that documentary. But first, Tony, before we do that, I wanted to check in with you, see how you're doing, and talk about our own alien in the Pentagon, our Pentagon, which is more like a trapezoid, I guess.
It's more like a square, I guess. Just like maybe a lopsided square. Is that what that rhombus? That's a rhombus, right?
I guess. All right, so there's a photograph that I'm going to post like before this episode comes out. So if you're listening to this episode, go to our social media, at Rated Paranormal, and I want you to look at this photograph. This is a photograph that my partner Tony Arkin took in Hawaii, is that correct?
Yeah.
And you, now just stop me when I'm wrong. You took this photo. I'm going to interview you like a MUFON person was trained to interview.
Okay, okay, great.
All right, here
great.
We go. Tell me about this picture. When did you take it?
I took this picture in, I believe it was 1987.
And what did you see?
At the time, all I saw was the picture that I was intending to take, which was a picture of clouds and palm trees in a very late evening, or like early evening nighttime sky, beginning of nighttime.
And then what?
I thought nothing of it. I took the picture. It was on film. I had the slides developed back in the day. And I remember the picture, but I never really looked very closely at it until recently.
And then what?
Your interview skills on MUFON.
See, they're trained not to lead. They're trained not to lead the witness. So I just simply, I think even asking when you took it is too leading. I think I blew it right off the bat. But anyway, you get the point.
Okay.
And scene.
And scene.
So you took this picture a long time ago. You were just trying to take a picture of the sky and trees and a beautiful Hawaiian, you know, scene.
Yeah, the sun had set kind of already, so it wasn't even a colorful sky. It was just kind of like a light gray, a lot of clouds in the sky, end of day. Shot, you know, just like your average tourist shot.
And was it, when did you first discover that there might be something in the sky in this photo?
I took this project kind of on at the beginning of lockdown to take all these slides out that I had collected over the years and try to digitize them. But I didn't have like a good digitizer, so I was working with like finding the perfect way to do it with my DSLR and kind of like, and I made a pretty good homemade rig to make nice digital copies of these things in RAW. So they're good, like, you know, high def images. And I noticed this going through the slides the first time about 2 years ago, but then everything kind of, you know, went crazy in the world. And I forgot about it amidst all the other crazy things that had happened. And then literally, in prepping for this show, I wanted to kind of refresh my desktop picture, and I randomly picked some Hawaii shots because I thought they were kind of evocative and nicer to look at than the last picture I had, which was of Charlton Heston in the movie Earthquake.
There is no random in ufology, Tony, but go ahead. There's only synchronicity.
This was the one that my computer chose to offer me at first. So I said, oh, cool, that's a nice shot. And I popped it up, and then I remembered, oh, my God, there's this anomaly in it, I thought. And I looked closer, and then I spent a good hour kind of, like, looking closer, getting the original you know, digital file out, looking at that much closer in Photoshop. And so really only kind of like rediscovered this within the last week. It's kind of fresh to me, even though I knew about this before lockdown.
So it's an old picture from Hawaii, and in the sky appears to be what? How would you describe what you see?
What I thought initially was that it was debris. I thought it was probably, you know, dust or something, you know. And in looking closer, what I'm seeing right now is a bell-shaped, perfectly symmetrical, classic UFO. Like it's 1960s style.
Right. Okay, so you took this picture of the Hawaiian sky, didn't see anything at the time, and years later discover there's like a speck in the sky or something. You give it a closer look and you go, oh my gosh, that could be something. And you bring it back out. But originally you just took these pictures out to digitize them. You weren't looking for strange anomalies. No. You're trying to save your pictures, basically.
Yeah, I like photography. Right. I used to take a lot of 35mm stuff, and I wanted to, you know, store them, digitize them.
So this craft, now I instructed you to go look at our Instagram page and our Facebook page at Rated Paranormal. You're going to see like the original. And then if you slide over on the Facebook, it'll just be next to it. On Instagram, you have to slide over. You're going to see like a close up of it. Well, there might be three, which we'll talk about in a second. But to me, the main one, the big one, the one that's the most visible, is clearly an unidentified object in the sky. It's not a speck. You know, again, not saying UFOs in quotes.
It's
something in that sky. Now here's the weird thing, Tony. To me, the first moment I saw this, and I didn't tell you until right now, I mean, I'm sure you've thought about this, but it looks exactly like Kecksburg. The craft that landed supposedly at the Kecksburg UFO incident.
Yeah.
1965 at Kecksburg, Pennsylvania.
With the goblins and stuff?
They described it as literally an acorn, like an acorn-shaped craft. It also reminds me of the Bell, the Nazi Bell UFO that people talk about. It's definitely acorn or bell-shaped. Actually, an acorn is shaped like a bell, vice versa. So,
yeah.
But I just thought...
It's very symmetrical and very, very clearly three-dimensional. Like, it's not... Like, if you look closely, you can see that the sun is shining on the top of it. There's shading on it. So it's not like a piece of debris on the lens or anything like that.
No, no.
The light is hitting the object.
Yes.
And at first I thought, well, it's probably a bug or something flying, but it just doesn't really jive. I looked really carefully. There's no kind of like distortion where the wings might be fluttering. It's a very clear outline, but just blurry enough to look like it might be moving. It's
absolutely, or very still, but because it manipulates the time space around it, you're never going to get a clear image, which is another commonality of getting pictures of
these. I ain't no scientist. I don't know what that highfalutin analysis means, but I do know that
you stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night. That's the second time I've used that joke on this podcast. I'm sorry. So now there might be three, but the other ones are much smaller. Those do more look like kind of specks, but they are there.
They're there, and they could be specks. They could be, you know, dirt on the lens or like on the negative. But they really have the same quality.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the same tonal range exactly as that larger one, and they're definitely there. They seem to be things that are there to me, because I've seen a lot of negs with like dirt on them and stuff. I've had to clean a lot of stuff up in Photoshop. So I've looked at like, you know, hairs in the gate and, you know, dust particles and all kinds of stuff.
Of course.
And these look like they were in that picture taken at the time to me.
And I think what makes it especially interesting with you is that you know, if this was just one thing that happened, this one thing, yes, it would be a fascinating picture, and who knows, it could be UFO. But with you in particular, you have a history, you have seen these things before, you've had experience with unidentified craft in the sky. So I think that makes it very, very interesting.
Well, you harp on this a lot. You keep saying like they're following me around, and I'm uncomfortable with that idea. You know, I'm, you know, it's just like in the last, I guess, couple years or since that New York Times article where I felt comfortable just even saying like, yeah, I've seen my share of strange things in the sky that I can't explain. I've never experienced anything, you know, more than that. I've never had an abduction experience. I don't know anything about what that's like. Well, you know, maybe I do. Back in the 90s, things were pretty weird, but...
You went to some parties in L.A. that could be described as abduction experiences.
Yeah.
Certainly lost time.
Certainly. Yeah, I've seen some weird things.
Don't you think a weird thing could be classified as, oh, I don't know, you co-host a paranormal podcast and you randomly decide to save some pictures, and the one that you randomly pick has a Bell UFO in it?
Yeah, I would classify that as pretty typical since we've started this show. Kind of thing has been more and more common.
So we would love to get your opinions on this, if anyone's an expert.
Yeah. You know, I haven't had it analyzed. You're the first person I've shown it to.
We had a, I remember Mark D'Antoni, I think it's D'Antoni, I don't remember. He is a MUFON guy that they use to analyze video and pictures. I might be able to send it to him. He was on my previous podcast and analyzed some video for us.
Oh, cool.
He's the, you know, kind of the go-to guy for MUFON, at least one of them.
Wow.
Yeah, he could take a look at this. And if anyone out there is an expert in any of these type of things, photography, whatever, would love you to chime in. And just if you have an opinion on, if you think it's something, or if you think it's something identifiable that you know, would be glad to be proven wrong.
Yeah, I'd love to know. Hey, I thought you were going to say, like, I know Larry down at the one-stop Photoshop at the mall, the parking lot.
Do you remember photo mats?
Step up. I do.
There was a photo mat. And young kids, you can just fast forward 30 seconds because you're not going to know what we're talking about. But there was a photo mat big enough for basically like one person to fit in the parking lot of my the town I grew up in the supermarket. Purity Supreme was the supermarket. And there was a photo mat in the parking lot so everyone would drive through and get their pictures. And there was a girl, Janice Hanrahan, that was my babysitter. She was older than me and I loved her. And I sat in that photo mat several winter nights just during her shift with the hopes that someday she would understand that I was worthy of loving, even though I was about 13 and she was like 18. And let's just say the only thing that developed in that photo mat were pictures.
Well, what were the pictures though? Pictures speak a thousand words, Maddie.
Nothing interesting.
Wow.
On my end or hers.
I want more stories like this. I want you to tell more stories like this.
It's definitely a paranormal event.
Less Stallone and more of that.
Oh, don't think I didn't quote some Stallone to her, I'm sure.
And things didn't go well.
Nope. Anyway, thank you for sharing that photo. I think that stuff is awesome. I love this stuff. You are, I believe there's some sort of connection. I don't know what it means for you, but even if it's just Tony, all kidding aside, gosh, I've interviewed so many UFO witnesses over the years and spoken with them. Not even interviewed. I've interviewed maybe a handful, but I've spoken to many, many, many. And, you know, there's a commonality that they see these things throughout their lives and they keep asking, they always ask, like, what do you think it means? What do you think it means? What are they trying to tell me? And they'll ask experts that. And you know, sometimes the answer is maybe nothing other than you have the ability to see them for whatever reason, you know? That could be just it. You have the ability to see them and other people don't. Maybe you just are lucky. Maybe you've looked more, or maybe certain people have the ability to see these things and other people don't, like ghosts or something.
Oh, maybe. I really don't know. I don't even have an instinct about it, you know, because I don't, there's nothing about these experiences that feel like unique other than the fact that, you know, I might be the only one there, but I've seen, you know, I think three of the most weirdest sightings I had were with other people.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. That's so significant too.
Yeah. I try not to decide what they are. You know, I try not to make like ironclad decisions about what they are or make my, you know, or change my life behavior because I've seen some weird stuff. I just find it fascinating. And, There's a couple I wish I had a person there with. I may be one of the weirder ones that I saw during the day in Brooklyn again, like during lockdown. I saw some strange stuff over Brooklyn.
Wow.
And then I read some stuff online that other people had seen across town had seen similar things, but whatever, man. I don't know. I'm just reporting the facts. Makes me nervous.
I think it's a perfect segue, Tony, because our film this week, Aliens at the Pentagon, is a documentary, and it deals in all of this stuff, sightings and belief and who's telling the truth and the government, a lot of that, and this whole kind of shakedown over the last few years of how all this has broken out in terms of disclosure since 2017 or the lack thereof and the report of the government, all that is dealt with. So I think there's a perfect time to kind of, like, you know, coincidentally have this photo found of a sighting and what is it and all of that. So I think it was perfect timing.
Yeah, it is perfect timing because it's been on my mind too. And some of the other podcasts I listen to that touch on some of this, I don't know. It seems like people are getting, I got kind of annoyed with the UFO thing after this last kind of anti-disclosure experience that we all had.
Yep.
And how it got shuffled out. Obviously there was other things going on, you know, but it seems like it ran its little course and then now it's kind of almost back to where it was. And that kind of bothers me. I would rather keep the conversation going than just kind of, you know, basically, I guess my takeaway is I'd rather keep the conversation going with you and me and with anybody else out there that's interested rather than let the conversation be ruled by the government or the military industrial complex. I'm really not interested in what they have to say much anymore, to be honest.
Yep.
And I'll get into that as we talk and why, but I just don't think that's a fruitful avenue of inquiry anymore.
I would completely agree. And yeah, I've had, you know, burnout on this stuff is something that happens and it's kind of why I am a jack of all trades in the paranormal world, not a master of one, because, you know, when I did get a little burnt out, maybe on the lack of UFO information or whatever over the years, I would then gravitate towards the spiritual things or, you know, and if that started to get quiet in my life, I'd go towards cryptids and ghosts hunting for a Bigfoot, you know, but always keeping the unexplained alive in my life. Cause I think it's the question of humanity of being a human is like, what don't we see? What can't we see?
Right.
So yeah, no, it's burnout's a real thing in this world because most of the time it's like treasure hunting. The show I do, the Oak Island stuff I do, it's like most treasure hunters don't find treasure their whole careers. You know, most treasure hunters are poor. Yeah. You know, it's the love of the adventure, the uncovering of history. We were with an old treasure hunter in this last episode, this guy Hoppy Eubanks from Texas. And Rick and Marty, the two stars of the show, were riding in the car with him and one of them asked, I forget who, and they said, Hoppy, let me ask you a question. I think it was Marty Lagina. He said, Hoppy, if you hit this treasure that we're going to look for and it was worth $2 billion, would you retire? And this guy's 80 years old and he's like, no way. And he goes, what would you do? He goes, I might buy a better pickup truck, but there's this other treasure I know about over in Utah. And I'm like, that's it.
Yeah, there he
is. It.
That's the guy.
And that's how I am with this stuff. You know, it's like, it's the quest of it. It's the talking about it. It's the thinking about it. It's that if you're focused too much on results. And I think this documentary that we're about to talk about is focused on minutiae and results, you will.
Yeah.
And then you get lost.
And if I might say also, certain very narrow fields of inquiry. Do you know what I mean?
I 100% know what you mean.
Very narrow bandwidth for what they're even suggesting could be out there. It's very kind of binary. It's either, even for a lot of these specialists, it seems like it's this or that, hoax or completely true. And I'm going to just say, like, the one person I thought who did talk some sense in one of the things we saw this week, not this movie, but one of the things we saw, is George Knapp.
Yes, sir.
Who... I don't know. I'd like to talk with you about him later in the show because he kind of spoke to me. I felt like his attitude was pretty good.
I'm right with you on all that. So let's get to it. Let's get to Aliens at the Pentagon from Nick Pope and others. And then we're also going to talk about another documentary that Tony just referred to that we got into because of watching Aliens at the Pentagon, which we will get to in a second. But I just want to say real quick also, Tony, before we get going, our top three list that we'll end the show with this week was inspired by Nick Pope. What's our top three tonight?
So tonight's top three is top three jackets in film.
Top three
meaning jackets. Meaning you know something a person wears over mm-hmm. a shirt.
We will tell you why that's our top three.
Mm-hmm. There's reasons for everything we do.
Coming up next. This tweet from Nick Pope. For those who've not yet seen it, the film Aliens at the Pentagon lifts the lid on some of the seismic UFO-related developments and revelations in recent years. It's cheap to buy or rent on Amazon and numerous other video viewing platforms. Hashtag UFO Twitter. That is the tweet that I sent Tony and said, oh man, do we have a movie for next week? And then we watched it. And first of all, I would say that him calling it a film, he says, if you haven't seen it, the film Aliens at the Pentagon is a misnomer. I would not classify this as a film. I would classify this as a video presentation, maybe, but certainly not a film. I was so shocked when I was 5 minutes into this that I actually called Tony. I've never done that before, right, Tony? In the history of doing this podcast. Never.
Yeah. Never called me before, ever. You usually don't even call me like on a friendly, for
no.
anything friendly.
I prefer we not talk.
This is amazing that we actually do this once a week, because I wouldn't even think you'd have my number. But yeah, you called me and we're pretty distressed.
Yeah, I was distressed. Now, Nick Pope is a guy that is, you know, ubiquitous in this whole thing, and he's everywhere, and I've seen him on TV a million times and all these things.
Read his books and stuff. I mean,
absolutely.
He's been around. And been a reputable voice, you know, apparently in this field for a long time. One of the more, you know, erudite, scientific-minded
yes.
people in the field.
Yes, and he worked in, you know, defense intelligence for...
He worked for the MOD, for MOD.
Right, exactly. So he's a great resource, and he has been a great resource, and he probably still is. But boy, I just can't understand, Tony, why he would put his name on something that just looked so... preposterous. The graphics are such, if you didn't watch it, you know, are so almost silly as to, I started to wonder if it was parody at a certain point. And then I just realized, no, it's just a video production done by probably well-intentioned people. But my goodness, when you're talking about a UFO and a, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. You'd have better words for it than I would, being an editor, but like a, I don't know, like a 1950s cardboard cutout of a UFO comes like floating by the screen as the transition. You're like, uh-oh, what's happening?
I don't even know where to begin. This is a piece of garbage, this thing. This is trash. And I was kind of amazed. I've seen things like this. I'll usually dip in for like 2 minutes and just be like, oh my God. And, you know, kind of have a laugh and click over. This is the first time I've ever watched one of these from beginning to end. And by one of these, I mean, it is a PowerPoint presentation. It's a talking head, badly recorded audio with an uncomfortable looking subject, badly shot against terrible green screen. And nothing was filmed except this guy's talking face. They didn't do anything but buy the shittiest imagery they could. There isn't even one actual photograph of a UFO in this entire documentary or documentary. I can't say this documentary. It's a presentation. It's a talk with crappy graphics behind it, like Birdemic level crappy, just awful 1990s MySpace artwork. Just unbelievable.
Exactly. And Nick Pope, the entire thing is Nick Pope sitting to camera reading off a prompter, which you can see his eyes scanning the prompter. He's wearing, you know,
sweating.
And I'm not picking on the guy. This isn't, but he's.
I think you should.
he's
atrocious. Appalling.
He's wearing like a kind of yellowed, crinkled T-shirt with like a really bad Joseph A. Bank type sweater. And then this horrible suit jacket that clearly wasn't his. He looked like if, you know, you were on a construction site or at a beach or something and you had to use the bathroom and you ran into a really nice restaurant and then to use the bathroom, they go, you have to wear this coat, sir. So you can go and use the bathroom. Like, that's all I could think of.
That's exactly right.
So it's like the coat they keep behind the host station. So the whole time, that's all I could think of, first of all. So it's just that. And by the way, that's our top three. That's where we came up with the top three is coats in film history, the most notable coats in film history, because this coat should be the star of the movie. But he is sitting, talking to camera, reading prompter, and all you'll see besides that is stock purchased recreations. Or like Tony said, like these graphics that they could presumably afford all they could afford. So there's nothing in it that they made. They just, so for example, if he talks about a government press conference, they have this stock footage that they probably bought from one of these clips.
The cheapest place you can get it too.
Exactly.
Honestly. So as it's an like editor, a, I'm telling you, like
yes.
This is.
So it's usually millennials. These parts are usually played by millennials or Gen Xers, and they're like, you know, in an ill-fitting suit, and it's blurred out so you can't quite see it. And someone's stepping up to a podium and tapping the microphone as if to give a press conference, as Nick Pope is saying, well, the government had a press conference,
right.
And they cut to this, you know, stock footage. They use the same 10 pieces of stock footage for recreations 3-4 times each.
Yeah, over and over.
Over and over and over again. In fact, yeah, I don't know if you noticed one of the press conference ones, the particular they used, it was a bunch of young kids sitting in chairs and the girl starts physically laughing. Like there's a girl on the right. She's got glasses on and whoever was playing the person at the podium, there's supposed to be a press conference, like asking questions. And, one of the, you know, quote unquote actresses in it, like literally starts laughing. She's like, and then she gathers herself and they use that clip like 7 times in the movie.
I didn't notice. Cause honestly, I couldn't, there's a lot of it. I couldn't watch. I just couldn't, I couldn't watch it. I just heard it. It works better as a podcast or something anyway, because
yes.
There's nothing, you're literally not getting any visual information in the entire film. There's nothing visual that you're going to get out of this or learn. Nothing is what they're talking about. You're not ever seeing any of the things Nick Pope is discussing.
That's right.
Or any of the actual people.
It's That's right.
Literally just people. It looks like people that are in the frames of the, when you go to buy a picture frame at the drugstore.
That's
and
what
the
it
people
is.
In those frames, the whole, those are the models from like JCPenney, you know, catalogs.
And
it's
I don't want to insult people who understand all this, but I also don't want to lose people who don't. I want to be very clear. What we mean is when you're making a video like this, someone like Tony, who's an editor, can actually purchase little pre-produced clips of, say, a press conference, right? And there you buy them. And that's a great analogy. If you bought a frame, there's a picture in the frame of like a fake family. Like that's the basically equivalent of it. And so that's all you see that's live action in this documentary is clearly pre-filmed, pre-produced.
Yeah.
And it might have, a couple of them might have been that video company, the production company itself. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. It's the worst of the worst.
It doesn't matter because also as an editor, I've seen people cut stuff together out of bad material and they make it okay. And this, they didn't, they didn't do anything with this to make it any better. They just showed you the worst video montage you've ever looked at. And honestly, this is a boring segment if you know anything about this stuff, but if you don't,
I just want to be
surprised
clear.
Why some movies, when you look at certain documentaries, look a certain way or they look cheap or whatever. A lot of the time they're not really shooting anything, they're just buying footage from other companies that shot stuff. And you know, you can make a fine movie like that. They didn't do that here. That's not what's going on. This is not even a movie. It's got no thing in it that you could say would belong in a conversation about movies. That's why you called me, clearly. It wasn't because it's bad, because it is bad, but it was because the production was just like, there's nothing, what do we talk about other than we got to come up with something else to talk about, which right. you did, which was a good idea.
I panicked when I saw it because I'm like, oh no. And you know, the content itself, fine. But this movie, one thing about this this presentation, and by the way, you said something very smart. If it was just a podcast, what Pope should have done is release this as a podcast, because the information itself is a great primer. And yeah. There was
nothing
there was
new.
A,
was it nothing new?
Although there was a couple things I wrote down. Okay, okay. So like the Tic Tac story, I've heard 500 times. You know, at this point, I missed one thing that he says in this that I had missed in all my analysis and reading up about the Tic Tac incident, was how Raytheon had bragged online about, hey, one of our radars caught one of these things. And they, and you know, I think the government had to be like, whoa, hey, Raytheon, tone it down. I didn't know that story. So that was a okay. new tidbit.
I guess I didn't know that. Yeah.
And I always accused my father, by the way, of being a spy. I never believed he was a salesman. I think he was a traveling spy, and he actually worked for Raytheon for a time. So it bolsters my theory, but I move on. my original, the point I was making is that, I think the movie, the good thing about this movie for me, or this presentation for me, is that it's my breaking point, and it's helped me to define something very clearly that I've been feeling but hadn't been able to put words to. It's a growing feeling I have, and this was the crystallization. This was the straw that broke my camel's back, and that is this. I am done with talking about machinations of disclosure. I'm done. I'm done. I never want to watch another documentary about it. I don't care, as you said, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but I don't care what the government knew at this point. I don't want to talk about what they knew, when they knew it, and who knew what, and who the players are, and to the stars. I don't give a f-. What I would watch a documentary about all day long is like the Betty Barney Hill incident, or I would watch a documentary about the pilots who chase that tic-tac-toe and what they have to say and their story and their lives.
I'll watch 100 of those creepy Dr. What's his name video, the contact video we saw early on in our season, where, you know, we didn't like the movie, but we were fascinated. I'd yes. watch that 100 times.
Yes.
I agree with you, man.
Yes. So this is just basically Nick Pope doing a great job, in a sense, of laying out how things have gone since 2017, and how ATIP relates to Bigelow, and how Bigelow relates to the stars, and who the players are, and who, you know, who Harry Reid is. And so if you're into this, it's like, great. If someone is super into facts and the news kind of elements of this whole disclosure things, and they know nothing about it, this might be a good thing to play for them, the audio of it. I certainly wouldn't show it to them.
I think you would be better to avoid it entirely, because I think that it makes a terrible case for anybody taking any of this seriously based on what on the intelligence level of the production that we're seeing. There's such a disconnect, which makes me really mistrust like how smart people are about other things.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it just does. I don't mean come off snobby or anything.
No.
But like, you know, you're calling this film, which is supposed to, which is not a film, but you're trying to make it look like a film, and you're calling it Aliens at the Pentagon. First of all, like, that's not what's happening. That's not in this. That's not in here.
There's no aliens at the Pentagon.
It's not in this movie.
And then he says this, I'll detail how it rips the lid off this story. And I'm going like, this documentary is going to be about how we were keeping aliens at bases. Oh my God, I love it. And there's nothing in here about anything like that.
I mean, I've seen three or four documentaries that I would say would be much better starting places for this overview than this movie, just because I think that, It couldn't be more dull or boring. It couldn't be more, you know, about the minutia, and I start to feel like, well, like you, I think, let's talk about what are the reasons why you end up feeling the way you're feeling now, or this conversation's over for you. Like, what were the steps here? How'd you get there? What were the things that you realized watching this that were like, it's done?
I'm done with the skeptics now are out for me. I have no interest. Like, I feel like we as people who are of good faith about this whole thing need to just take it from them. Like, if a documentary gives a quote unquote skeptic time, I'm not going to watch it. Like, I'm done. I, you know, if at this point you are still fighting that fight of like, I'm just not interested in the argument anymore about whether it's real or not, or even necessarily like what the government knew and when they knew it. I don't really, that argument's over for me. I don't really care at this point. What I care about is what they are, what they might mean, and what they do to people. Like, that area of things is like really fascinating to me still.
I agree. I mean, I think for me, because I walked away exactly the same way you walked away from this. I had the same exact reaction. I'm done. I'm so annoyed by this conversation.
Yeah.
And by the fact that this round robin discussion that keeps happening with it is expected to entertain me even at this point. Because I really can't classify it as anything but entertainment. And here's where I lost it. Here's where my train just jumped right off the track. They're interviewing one of the people on the skeptical side, who I've seen in a couple movies, and they trot this weird, greasy-haired, creepy guy out every time they're talking about disinformation.
Now, hold on. I'm going to pause you. You are getting into the next documentary we watched.
Oh, that's right.
No, but I'm glad you are, because I want to transition there, because I didn't have a heck of a lot more to say about him.
Sorry.
So,
and I'm doing this because I actually had, I watched this and then I started watching the other documentary, and
same.
I had, they were both now conflated. They're both almost the same experience to
yes.
me.
Yes, yes.
Because I feel like, in a way, UFO was the same thing in better clothes.
100%. I got more mad at UFO. So what happened was Tony and I got I called Tony in a panic behind the scenes here. And I said, oh my God, this thing has a UFO going as to Nick Pope's dogs. And I was like,
yeah,
it's just awful. I said, so as a backup, why don't we watch UFO, the J.J. Abrams series documentary.
This new Showtime series.
So we both bought it, Showtime. And that ended up making me in some ways more pissed off than the Nick Pope one. Because, okay, and then Tony, you continue. You were making a point about the UFO documentary, one of the skeptics they had on.
Yeah. So what I was feeling throughout the Nick Pope doc got clarified in the UFO doc for me, because after all this discussion about the government knowing or not knowing or hiding or admitting or saying then taking it back, then we talked to this disinformation guy who apparently single-handedly can take credit for all of the information that passed through about UFOs in this country and everywhere else. And can, you know, categorically say, like, you know, none of this is real because I made 30 phone calls in 1972 and confused some people.
And haha, I drove a guy crazy.
But all kidding aside, the interviewer had said one interesting thing to that guy. And he said, well, why should I believe you now?
Yeah.
And the guy stops. It's the only good moment of all this stuff for me. And the guy stopped and he didn't know quite how to talk about it anymore, because the guy was like, well, you're a liar, right? And then he goes, well, I didn't lie. I was just doing my job, is
right.
basically what he says.
Yes, yes.
At which point I kind of turned the channel, because I was like, okay, well, now there is simply no part of this where somebody can't say that was not true, or we didn't mean that part, but this was true, or he was lying here, but we're not lying here.
Yes.
I can't spend another 5 minutes going down that road, because that's where insanity lies.
Yes.
And I am now convinced that it's exactly the way that the powers that be want this. The government, if they do have information or if they don't, they just don't, they want it to be confusing. And I think it's because the worst thing isn't mass hysteria. The worst thing that they can conceive of is that we don't think they know what's going on.
Yeah, right. Yep.
So it's better that we think they have tech and aren't telling us and lying than if we think they don't know what the hell this shit is.
That's probably their worst fear, right?
Yeah. So, this is, it's just
And you take that guy in particular. He describes how he was a disinformation guy, making a guy believe what he saw was UFOs, and drove him crazy, basically. Mm-hmm. Which is an old story that if you follow this, you know about this guy. He's claimed that so skeptics look at this guy and say, aha, he was a disinformation agent, therefore all of this is disinformation, which is disingenuous and doesn't account for everything, as we'll
bad
get
science
later. The same guy goes, well, that guy drove insane. Here's the funny part, he actually did take a picture of actual UFO craft later.
So he's supposedly, like, a believer.
What the So, you know, what are we doing and why are we giving these people, like J.J. Abrams gives him a lot of time. He gives the former MUFON guy who's a skeptic a lot of time, which is fine. He keeps saying, I'm a truth seeker, not a skeptic. Nah, you're a truth seeker to find the what you want it to be, which is government testing on it. Because then he says, well, I know what this is. Basically, the reason the pilots who chase the Tic Tac don't know what the Tic Tac was is because it is the government. It's a secret cabal of the government using our pilots as test subjects to see how they react. See, that's what it is. I want truth. No, you want it to be the government testing. So you're going to find all the evidence that fits with that. He gets a lot of time. This really kind of annoying woman who the second I saw her, I go, oh boy, here we go. She was like a professor at UPenn.
A science history professor.
Yeah, yeah. And she's just, she actually at one point in this documentary, and this is where I got pissed, she uses the term crackpots. You know, it's really difficult to tell the difference between someone who's actually seen something and a crackpot. The definition of a crackpot is, and she defines the definition of crackpot. I'm like, why is that in this thing? Why is she getting so much time?
Yeah.
It broke me. I was like, I'm done with skeptics. You know what? You're not even welcome into the room anymore. I used to give you, I gave you my life. I gave you 25 years of like trying to convince you with, you know, like, look, these things could be real.
Or trying to be rational and listen to you because I'm curious. Both sides, tell me what, you know. I mean, look, it shouldn't be sides. You know, if we're all after what the answers might be, there's only one side. Let's figure it out. But the opposition to that is clearly, you know, entrenched in a certain kind of thinking.
Yes.
About even what the semantics of it mean. I mean, what the words actually mean.
Yes.
I mean, I know we're talking about UFO. We were going to talk about this Nick Pope thing first, but here's where the meat of it is. I mean, like, between that incident with the disinformation guy who's like, well, trust me now. I'm like, oh, well, no. No. And the other thing was that when the guy who used to work for MUFON is just saying, like, look, there's no evidence. Well, cut to George Knapp, the journalist, seems to be a sensible human being here in the midst of all this craziness, is saying, like, well, how do you define what evidence is? Like, what if evidence to you, and I realized people think now that evidence means proof.
Right.
That's not what evidence is.
Right.
Evidence, you can have a court case and have a lot of evidence pointing to somebody being a murderer, and
that's
they find out he didn't do it. It's still evidence.
That's right. You can reject the evidence, or you can use it to mitigate or aggravate the circumstances, but it's still evidence. You're exactly right.
And I feel like the guys in the MUFON, like this gentleman from MUFON, his job seems to be to reinforce this lie, which is that there's no evidence.
Yes.
All he needed to do was just show up and say that in this interview and destabilize the entire conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to George Knapp saying, what does that even mean? There's nothing but evidence.
Yes.
There's a lot of evidence that there's something there. There's no evidence that there's nothing there.
Yes. And
so
exactly
define
right.
the terms.
Exactly right. And by the way, you take, like, I don't know how you can bring in George Knapp and not mention Bob Lazar and tell his story a little bit. You talk about evidence, man.
I mean,
and Bob Lazar kind of broke George Knapp, or vice versa, I guess. But,
oddly,
you know,
oddly missing from this show.
Yes, oddly missing, because here's the thing. Bob Lazar probably has he probably has the hard, tangible evidence, the materials and the or at least that element maybe that they've long claimed.
Well,
maybe he doesn't, maybe he does. But when that guy comes forward with that, or To the Stars has released some cryptic tweet pictures of a metal material, this is real, it'll say, or something like that. Like, when they come up with that, and it's tested and proven that it came from space, MUFON guy will say, yeah, well, you know, there's no evidence, there's no proof. Well,
this is why I'm saying this kind of language, this language of disinformation is embedded in this kind of skeptical viewpoint, which is there's just no evidence.
Yes.
Well, we can't go forward if we can't accept all the other things that would be evidence in any other case, photographic evidence, you know, residue from sightings, radioactivity, all of this reported, eyewitness reports dating back forever from very reputable people. That's all evidence of some kind in any other sphere. So where that becomes not evidence, and maybe they're just talking about, you know, for all I know, maybe they're just talking about evidence that the government has an alien in their basement. I don't care, Maddie.
Agreed.
Do I care whether we have an alien or not? If that's the sole interest for somebody, then go watch these videos and have fun. Because that's really not the most interesting thing about all this.
Yeah, that's it. It's so slippery. They will say, I'm after truth. And 90% of the time when they say that, it's actually they're after the truth, as is true in other areas of life. They're after the truth that fits their worldview, which in this case was, this is simply government technology that we started after World War II and that we're using our own pilots as testing. And that's why no one knows about it. And that's the hill they're dying on. And I'm sitting there yelling at the screen going, what about, I'm quoting you, Tony. I'm going, how about middle age? How about, you know, 1,000 years ago? How about biblical times, like UFO stories in the Bible, things like that? How about ancient stone carvings? How about indigenous people that have had relationships with these things? And then as I'm saying that, our hero, George Knapp, sitting in this diner, like ripping a butt. He's like, hold on a sec. This stuff's been going on for millennia, since the beginning of humankind. Like, it doesn't explain it all. It might explain some of it.
And if that's not good enough for you, it's also been going on exactly the same way since the 40s or the late 30s. Then we started really analyzing what was in the skies during World War II. This started becoming the idea of a threat. That's why you have a crazy flap that happens in L.A., you know, after Pearl Harbor. And there's discs over Washington. I mean, stuff was photographed and seen at this time and reported, acting and behaving exactly the same way as it does today.
Yes. And so
how does that, how are you there? What cover up was going on in the 40s for technology that was 300 years advanced from 1940?
Right. Yeah.
The math doesn't work out.
Exactly right. I was thinking about a music analogy to equate with my frustration. Like, and I thought of your beloved Beatles, and I joke because here's why, because I happen to love the Beatles. I love the Stones. I love all classic rock. The reason I can talk all day about the Beatles with you is because I know you respect their musicianship and what they meant to music. Like, that's the baseline. Now,
100%.
You just, right. And you just wouldn't, you would choose to listen to the Kinks on a day as opposed to like Abbey Road, right? Most times.
100%.
Okay. So we can have that argument all day. But if you sat there and said to me like, nah, Beatles are nothing. Beatles sucked. They're overrated. I wouldn't even talk to you about it, about music. Like, you're disqualified from talking about music with me. I'd be like, no, I don't respect your opinion. I'm done with that conversation. It's not an argument. It's like, you're just arguing nothing. And that's how I feel about this UFO thing. Like, once you start saying, it's simple. Okay, it's simple. The government simply, and I'm after the truth. These believers will do it. I'm just like, I'm out. I don't want to see that documentary. As soon as I see them framed in the shot, I'm going to shut it off or fast forward it.
It's a slippery slope too, because here, you know, here's the other thing we talked off air actually about this, I'm confused why they think this math is actually math they want to do. They want to go down this road of saying that the government had access to technology this advanced for the last 60 years, 80 years, which is what you're saying.
Yep.
If you're saying that, that's what you're saying. It's 80 years since World War II, essentially, and that's when this stuff, this technology, was seen in the same form we're seeing it today. So you're telling me that for 80 years, our government and all of our superpowers had the ability to change all of our energy infrastructure, create new forms of technology that might save the planet and stop all of the stuff that's going on right now, and they chose not to do it because they wanted to build little missiles and shit? I'm not okay with that worldview. Like, if that's what you're signing up and your belief system is signing you up for, well, I got some problems with our government, but I don't have that level. I don't think that's going on here. I would really much rather believe that they don't know what's happening and they're scared of their countrymen thinking they don't know what's going on, so they better look like they know. That makes a lot more sense to me. I believe that technology would have leaked in other ways, and we would have then found out about this in other ways if this existed. Although, however, you know, you could say that, like, you know, Tesla's info is out there, but nobody really knows about it.
Yeah, so, we monetize that. But I agree. The fact that there could be some large cabal that would have that level of technology and not have used it yet for some even nefarious purpose is almost unbelievable and incomprehensible. And the fact they would do something like that, you're right, have that level of technology and not use it to try to help us and hide it.
Yeah, clean energy, for one thing, would probably be something that would be involved in this. So, you know, my desperate hope is that they're trying to get some of this technology and use it for something good, and that they need to keep that quiet in order to do the job well. Maybe that's going on. I don't know. I just don't think that's a very, you know, people think they're being reasonable when they say things like that. When they say, like, oh, it's the government. It's like, yeah, be reasonable, man. You really think it's the government?
Yeah.
Really? You think that they have this and they're not sharing, and they're just simply going to not share it with you at all?
Here's the other thing that freaking pissed me off. And I could be wrong on this, but what I was always taught, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, and if I misheard her or if I have the story wrong, please correct me. But the way I was always taught about Roswell, and I've heard that story since I was, I don't know, 8 years old when I started getting into this stuff, is that Roswell, an article went out, oh my gosh, we found a craft, right? And then the government quickly nixed it and said, no, it was a weather balloon, to protect themselves, right? The girl, the like cynic girl in the UFO video told that story like out of sequence. She said, they immediately said weather balloon to protect themselves because, right? And then they said, well, no, it's a craft. And they said, no. And yeah, I literally said to Colleen, I go, that's wrong.
She flipped the story that I heard.
Right? Yeah. And I go, what the fuck? She, you can't leave that in the documentary if you're J.J. Abrams without correcting that. Like, Roswell is the holy grail of all this stuff. And you have a cynical, unless he was trying to make her look bad, which I don't think he was, she f***ed up the story. And I'm like, why? That's disrespectful. And that's just, unless I misheard her, but both of us seem to have misheard her. Colleen was with me, my wife, and she was like, yeah, no, that's kind of reversed, yeah, right? And I said, yeah.
I remember that.
The balloon was to cover for the, and so like that level of, I don't know, man, that's not good. Point is, Tony, that mess up, that reverse, she had a point about that. She tied it into a later government balloon program and how the government goes to cover up. And that order of how she told it fit her narrative or her skepticism. So it's almost like she, I don't know, was subconscious, reversed it so it fit her point. Mm-hmm. I don't care, but the fact that it's in that documentary really made me mad without getting corrected, if I heard it right.
Look, what made me mad is that, you know, after she says crackpot, they literally cut to a JPEG, a bot footage, not even footage, a photograph of a dude wearing a tinfoil hat.
Oh, yes.
Holding
yes.
a dog with a tinfoil hat on.
Yes. Oh, God. I mean, so I'm that done. Made me mad. Yeah. I'm
but,
out.
You know, I mean, what I was going to say, too, about this Roswell thing is now I'm kind of feeling like I'm lumping Roswell in there, too. Why do I care about Roswell? Roswell's one story in a billion stories. If that's so compromised by he said, she said, we retract, we redact, we don't, I'm dropping it. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll think about the other ones that, you know, the other 700 and how many was it? 701 completely unexplained sightings mm-hmm. that Sign, Grudge, and Blue Book cannot account for, mm-hmm. let alone the ones that ATIP can't account for. Yes. I'll focus on the Tic Tac, which they don't know what it is.
Right.
So, you know, I don't care about Roswell. I don't.
I'll tell you,
you know what I mean? Like, well, who cares?
100%. No, it's like Roswell is how many years old? Now 70 it's, years old, 60
it's
years old,
70, 60, 70 years old.
I yeah, mean, and it's like we're not gonna, you know, it might become incredibly interesting again if we find out what these things are, and that does end up being like the first time one crashed that we recovered something, whatever. But you're right,
but then it's only gonna be interesting as a footnote, because then that's just gonna be where it happened to take place. The thing itself will be the interesting story, not that it was Roswell. Who cares?
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
I feel for the people that went through that, because some of them are still alive and having this weird experience with it. But I hope that they're not driven bananas too much by the way this story has gone, and they could just claim it and make sense of it for themselves, because no one's going to get any clarification or sense from any of the talking heads or experts or powers that be out there who are dealing with this stuff. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, it's already hard enough with something that happened in 2004, never mind in the 40s. You know, and
I mean, they're already saying that that Elizondo didn't work for ATIP.
Yeah, that's right. They reversed that, and now Elizondo has left to the stars. By the way, too.
The good news to me, though, is that this wasn't depressing. This was a good break for me because what it actually showed me and what it felt like, and the part of the UFO doc that resonated with me was the Robert Mack stuff. Is it Robert Mack or John Mack? Sorry, John Mack. The psychiatrist.
Yes.
The Harvard psychiatrist. They gave him some love in this doc, which I appreciated.
Me too.
And I mean, his viewpoint, which aligns like a little bit more with that kind of Jacques Vallée, John Keel kind of territory, where the mystery of it is really kind of the point in a way that we may need these mysteries as humans as some important component to our lives, that the actual fact of it being a mystery is the good thing, maybe. Mm. And that's an interesting viewpoint on it. It's also reminded me that this belongs to people. This isn't about governments. These stories have always been about farmers in a field somewhere, or, you know, local cops seeing something at night, or a couple driving at night and getting abducted. It's about people. It's our stories. It's not the government's story. They're just screwing it up for us right now in terms of how they're packaging it for us. That's my takeaway.
Once again, you've helped me define something about myself. You know, as I mentioned, I get off on like talking to witnesses or hearing stories of the pilots. I spend very little time analyzing the government report about who knew what when and why, you know, Bigelow is related to this former CIA guy who now works for To the Stars. Like, yeah, okay, cool, kind of, but I'm done with it. It broke me. So you're right. I want to talk about the people and how it affected them and how these stories affect us and how these moments affect you. And that's where I'm at. And if
the evidence seems to point to it being really about us.
Yes, absolutely. And it could be us. It could be us right here in another dimension, as Keel said, or some form of us or some form of a dimension that's right here. It's not out there in space, which I'm totally open to, which these skeptics don't even give a hoot.
No, they don't talk about it.
You know, there's a part where they interview in UFO, which is my favorite part of the whole thing. And I think it's the best of this documentary. They interview that radar specialist.
Yeah.
And he breaks down. It kind of ruined his life. Having seen this on radar, he describes a very compelling account of like, if something is moving that slowly at that height, it's going to fall out of the sky. You're not getting the thrust and lift. You can't move that slow that high. You're going to drop. And he's like, and it just stays there and stays there and stays there and then stops and then drops really fast and then goes back up. And he's going, what the? And he's like, you know, that destroyed him almost, that whole, because no one believed him. He had to be quiet about it. That whole, like, I would watch a documentary about that type of thing all day long, to the point where I said to my wife, I want to show you something that's better than anything we saw tonight, because I dragged the poor gal through these things. I went to the 60-minute interview with Colonel Fravor and the female pilot, whose name escapes me, who actually chased the Tic Tac. Mm-hmm. And that 3-minute interview with the 60 Minutes guy was better than anything I watched in 6 hours of watching documentaries about UFOs. Heart-wrenching. He asked her at one time, the 60 Minutes guy goes, why are you coming forward? She goes, I never want to be on TV. I'm an Air Force pilot. She's the best of the best, the best this country has to offer. And you could tell she was. And he goes, why'd you want to come forward? She goes, because I was on the clock for the American people. I was in an American craft that you paid millions of dollars for us to operate. And I earned your trust as the American people, is basically what she was saying. I'm paraphrasing. But so for me to see something like this and keep it secret is inappropriate. You know, I wanted to come forward. You should know this stuff. And I'm like, that 3 minutes made the whole 6 hours. We're like, that's what we're interested in. That's what I love. That's the conversation I want to have.
Or that interview will be good, but it'll never be a good show. Yeah. Like, it's just not going to be.
Right.
You know, unless it's really done rogue, unless it's a true documentary made by a real filmmaker who's really tenacious and really takes some risks. Like, I think there's a lot of great documentaries to be had out of a lot of these characters in these films, like Ms. Basulka, who wrote UFO Dreams or something, a great book about, she's interviewed in UFO. is it, I'm going to get these names wrong, but Keen, the
Leslie
writer.
Keen.
Leslie Keen, who's who wrote, great, very
yeah, UFO.
Erudite.
I love that book.
She's great. You know, there's some really smart people that have had some interesting journeys on this trip that don't yeah. have proof one way or another, but have had some really cool stories to tell. I'd love to see deep dives on any of these people.
Absolutely. Leslie Keen, that book, UFO, I read that was like my Bible for a long time with skeptics and stuff.
Great
like,
book.
I think I've quoted on this podcast before, like the first chapter or first one of the first lines, she goes, you know, that there are things in the sky flying that we don't know what they are. That is fact. Now, are there little green men driving them? That's another question, you know, and she just lays it out so well. Although a little tidbit I learned in watching another thing I'll give this documentary, another fact I learned that I didn't know is that her, I believe it was her uncle, like headed up the 9/11 commission. So she's actually kind of tied into some government people, which is kind of not alarming, but it makes you go, oh, she's not some unattached rogue journalist who
it's either alarming or it means that she's got access to more levels of stuff that
exactly you know. It could be a good thing, I don't know, but I just don't know. She's I never knew that about her. Her uncle was like ran the 9/11 commission. Well,
anybody that's could be making money off of this, you gotta wonder, like, yeah. you know, where, okay.
Anything else, Tony, before we get to our top three outstanding coats in film history? All right, so it's obvious, I think, quite clearly, we could say that we didn't do a very good job of hiding this one, but yeah, Aliens of the Pentagon is not going to make our shelf. It gets a P for a pass, a capital P for pass. And I'm going to throw UFO in there by J.J. Abrams, too. I want to pass on that, too. For me, it's not getting on our shelf. It does not get a P for paranormal. How about you?
Me neither. Neither of them do. And it kind of pains me to have to throw J.J. Abrams' show under the bus because I didn't want to. I thought I was excited. I thought if there was one person in Hollywood, I thought, who really could maybe push this forward in a documentary, be him. But I didn't really learn anything new. And he soft-pedaled it. He got scared. And it was just like In Search Of again. And I'm seeing that show.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he gave the wrong people way too much time. Way too much time for my liking.
I agree.
So there you go. All right, well, let's make some lemonade out of these lemons, Tony, and look at our top three
notable jackets in film history.
All right. Would you like me to begin or would you like to begin?
Well, please do. Have you made this an honorary award of some kind or have you?
Yes.
You have...
Let's make it an honorary award. Let's call it the Steph McKee Coat Award for the part that James Spader played in Pretty in Pink. For the that whole movie, it could be called the Pretty in Pink Award because all the jackets in Pretty in Pink are unbelievable.
I really haven't seen that in a while. I can't remember the wardrobe.
James Spader plays Steph McKee. He's like, she's a loser, Blaine. Why are you hanging out with common trash? He's so good in that. He comes out smoking a cigarette at the high school party. I'm like, he's in a robe. He's like this evil high school
kid.
Yeah.
Oh, bad guys always wear robes.
They're just wearing like, he just wears this unbelievable kind of Miami Vice 80s white jacket. It's just glorious. And I just,
amazing.
Every time I think of jackets, or maybe there's a better honorary jacket. Maybe even the Marty McFly denim jacket. It could be the Marty McFly jacket.
I had the Triple X award for his. It was the honorary Triple X award for Vin Diesel's fur coat that he had in Triple X.
Excellent. All right, we'll get any one of those. It could be the honorary jacket. I love it. All right, so my number three outstanding jacket in a film. Oh, and I themed mine this time, which you usually do. Mine was kind of, I didn't mean to do this, but as I started thinking about what are my favorite coat moments in movies, I realized all my favorite coat moments are coats as weapons. Or
that makes total sense. You're not surprising me.
All right. So my number three, one of your favorite movies of all time, Nighthawks. Sly Stallone.
I knew it.
Sly Stallone, opening scene, dressed as a nurse. He's in an awesome coat. You know, full length coat with a fur thing, and he uses the coat as a weapon. If you haven't seen it, that's all I'm going to say. He uses the coat, and it's awesome. Oh,
I was gonna say Nighthawks, but I was gonna let you have it. I figured I knew you wanted Nighthawks.
I needed it. And by the way, his coat game throughout that entire movie is so strong. He goes from that coat to a crushed pleather like tan suit jacket type of thing, badass. He looks great in it.
Gotcha.
And then at the end, he's in a robe. He's in Lindsay Wagner's robe. It's just a strong, strong Coat game.
Sartorial choices across the board. Yes, my number three. Okay, to describe how I chose and where I was going with this, I was going for more like, really, that's the Coat?
Love it.
Like, that was it. You're going to choose that one?
Well, that's okay. More accurate because it was inspired by Nick Pope's Coat in Aliens of the Pentagon, and he's wearing that horrible... Yeah, and you say, what? Who approved that? Yeah. Nobody is the answer.
So I have a list of coats that either I felt were inappropriate or poorly costumed somehow.
I love
or
it.
Against character, or just like, why are you wearing that coat? So my number three would be from the movie Jurassic Park, and I've always had a problem with Jeff Goldblum's Studio 54 black cocaine disco leather jacket that he decided to wear to the jungle. I felt that was a strange choice to wear. I didn't believe that he would wear that either in the jungle or in the lab. So
not
I don't
functional.
Know, non-functional and also just a strange choice. Like, was that Spielberg's choice? Probably. And that's like what he thinks people wear when they go out, when they're cool guys. I don't know. It's always
bothering. Oh, yeah. I got it. I'm looking at an image of it now.
Yeah, it's like he just came from Andy Warhol's from the factory, and he's going to go do coke at Studio 54.
I mean, look, he's a rock and roll doctor, Tony.
Right.
You know, he rocks and then he docks.
Like you do. Yeah. Like they have.
He rocks and then studies the...
I'm not arguing your choices. Don't tell me I can't be upset.
my number two, again, coat as a weapon or instrument of destruction would be John Wick's bulletproof suit jacket. Nobody wore a suit jacket like John Wick. I mean, does anyone look better in a suit than Keanu Reeves in that movie? I don't know. Maybe as good, but not better.
Cary Grant's the only other person.
There you go. And Cary Grant has way less of a body count, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's true. He's got to work on that.
But I looked it up. I
did more LSD, though, for what it's worth.
Which is unbelievable when you think about it. I looked it up, and these suits are based in reality. They have suits that certain special forces people will wear, and they're not quite as, you know, they're not completely bulletproof, but they will stop a handgun, at a certain distance. So pretty amazing.
I love thinking of you Googling this late at night, because that's what do spies wear when they're shooting people?
I literally tried to look into ordering one.
I bet you did. Okay. That's so funny. I love it. That'd be me like, I'm going to direct a movie, so I got to go, what do directors wear? They wear those boots. And they wear... they have a riding crop.
I want a bulletproof suit.
My number two... Mm-hmm. Is it my turn or your turn?
Your turn, two.
My turn. You just did John Wick. Okay.
Yes.
My two. I'm going to go for Highlander, because I feel that his Wall Street trench coat is a really, really odd idea. To wear as a time-traveling swordsman from ancient Scotland.
It doesn't fit. It's very unfunctional.
Like, it's not like a cool, like, retro army trench coat that, like, Michael Biehn has in Terminator. This is literally like...
I love that jacket.
This is literally like Gordon Gekko's trench coat that he's wearing over, like, no shirt and jeans and sneakers. And
it's
you're
a
like,
weird
what?
Choice.
It's too big for him. The lapels go out to his shoulders. It is horrible.
Wasn't it like pea green, too? Like, I remember being...
No, it's just a basic tan.
Or like, it's tan? Just, okay, that was just a movie poster.
I thought it was green, too, because it's like, that would be cool, like a military trench.
Yeah.
No, this is literally like, it's Gordon Gekko's trench coat. It's just so bad.
That's hilarious. Well, I got a trench coat on my honorable mentions, which I'll get to in a second. But my number one, I think I wanted to say this as the honorary award, but it was my number one. And I think it's just one of the, when I think of coats and movies, it's this, and it's a movie that we've mentioned before, but I couldn't avoid it. It's Mel Gibson's leather jacket in Mad Max. And I'd like to read for you a little bit of... a description of the jacket. I think this was from What's the horror magazine that reviews horror magazine more?
Fangoria?
Yeah, I think it was from Fangoria, I think. As a point of fashion, what desert cruising desperado wouldn't look positively renegade in black streaky leather, shoulder pads bolted for protection, tons of weaponry to be hidden inside, pretty minimal surface coverage though, while a massive turndown collar gives a bit of an attitude, very cowboy-esque. It's like biker meets functional meets gang warfare. So it's Mad Max's leather jacket.
And, hey, it's a, I mean, his getup is fantastic.
So good.
One arm's missing off of it.
Yeah.
It's great. You get to show some guns and have a full leather on. It's great.
That's my number one.
That's good stuff. All right. I love it. I love it. All right. Well, I, as usual, I have not number one. I have addendums and I have some things. So I want to just bring up, this is an interesting conversation for me because I remember a conversation I had with my dad when we saw Blade Runner together way back in the day. He wasn't a fan of the movie. I loved it. But one of the things he made fun of was Harrison Ford's trench coat in the film.
Oh, my God. That was my honorable mention I just mentioned.
Which, look, I love the silhouette. It's very groovy. The 40s kind of retro vibe is nice. It is the biggest coat that ever was. And my dad always was like, why the hell, if you're a detective and you're running around the streets, do you wear the biggest coat that's going to get caught on stuff and get in the way? It's like, he's absolutely right. So in honor of him, I'm going to include that, mention that, and also mention the Amazing Matrix series, which has a similar problem.
Yes.
That stuff has not dated well for me at all.
Yes.
I feel those long leather trench coats are silly and they would get in the way of any martial art you were trying to do.
Yes.
I don't like them. But
you're
that's
right.
Just me. And we have another kind of classification. This is a weird choice on purpose. Because I think the red corduroy jacket that Jack Nicholson wears in The Shining is incredibly creepy and inappropriate, but perfect for the character.
I remember it. It was like crushed velvet, like not even corduroy. It's like velvet.
It's like a velour,
it's
a
reddish
corduroy.
Velour. Yes,
it's
yes,
a soft
like a velour.
Corduroy.
Oh
and
God,
it
is that creepy?
Really wrong and creepy, but in the right way. So that's like bad costuming on purpose that works. I love.
Yes,
that.
It is. It represents the blood of the indigenous people that we spilled.
Exactly, and the moon landing.
Yes. And the moon landing.
Which they
yeah.
exactly the coats that they wore in the modules.
Yes.
So my honorable mention really should be an umbrella thing, which is just an overall thing because it's not one coat, it's every coat. And that's Inception. The movie Inception looks like a catalog for like today's man. Every dude in this thing has got a stupid tailored jacket that's a little too short and a little too snug. It's incredible. It doesn't make any sense. But
yes.
All time number one jacket. Why are you wearing it? It's a movie I like. But it's a costume choice I'm not a fan of. And that goes to Drive. Ryan Gosling is a criminal who wears a white satin jacket with a scorpion on the back.
Oh, I was going to say dragon, but it's a scorpion, isn't it? Yes, I remember that. Yes.
Which is an interesting low-profile vibe for a criminal. Like, if you're trying to be like a clandestine dude, not
hey.
Like,
yeah.
you know.
We need our driver to be discreet.
Right. Literally, he's a getaway driver, and he wears a white satin jacket with a scorpion on it.
No better way to alert the authorities that...
What a jerk.
That you're just out for a little stroll in your car.
It's a great movie. Literally, like, destroyed by a character choice of wardrobe that makes me go, what is this guy
yes.
thinking he is right
it's
now?
It's supposed to be so badass, and you're exactly... It's like something that Lenny from Lenny and Squiggy would wear.
I would I would appreciate it on him. Yeah. So that's my number one.
That is so great. My honorable mentions, Tony. I mean, again, I'm a creature of habit. I am what I am. I'm going to stop fighting it and just go with it.
Did Schwarzenegger have a nice jacket?
No. Well, yes, but I was thinking of First Blood, the first one. John Jay's green, when he's hitchhiking through town, he's got that green army jacket. I mean, that is such an iconically jacket.
It's a basic army jacket,
It is,
though,
but
right?
He wears it so well.
You're a sick man. You're sick in the head.
And the number one, what actually should be the number one, but it's my honor to mention because it's not a film, it's a music video. I'm going to give it to Daryl Hall for the Rich Girl video when he's wearing a full mink leather, a full fur coat with these red block sunglasses.
I remember
the Rich Girl video.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, why is he wearing a fur coat? We don't know, because it's called Rich Girl, I guess, and he's playing off that theme, but it's iconic.
When you want to see a funny coat, go look at the Men Without Hats video. That's another 80s video that's got a good coat in it.
Oh, Safety Dance?
Men Without Hats, the Safety Dance. Great video. Great coat. Fantastic. And then,
I'm looking at it now.
Here's a coat that almost ruined an entire movie single-handedly.
What?
What is Tom... Why did Tom Cruise wear a brown, like, Gap leather jacket in War of the Worlds? With, bad racing stripes on it.
Yeah, that jacket was weird and distracting. You're right.
Made him look fat, and it's more distracting than the UFOs and the aliens.
You're right. The racing stripes down the outside of the arm. Yeah,
terrible.
That was a distracting jacket. You're right.
I don't know what they were thinking.
You just made me realize, you know who had cool jackets? Or Starsky and Hutch. They always wore great jackets.
Very good jackets. Yeah.
Paul Michael Glazer was asking. He had like the cool leather zip up with the fur tan collar. And David Soul would wear like the mid-length yellow leather jacket. Oh God, I wanted to be them.
You can wear that stuff. You can get away with that.
No, I can't.
You can.
No, I can't.
No, well, no, you can, because no one cares what you wear anymore. It's just,
six.
You can wear whatever you want.
People
just be like, oh, it's that guy wearing that weird stuff again.
No. David Soul's like 5'10" and like blonde and gorgeous. He'd get away with it. I'm a 6'3", 215-pound Irishman, lanky. I'd look terrible in something like that.
No one would have the courage to tell you otherwise, though. No one would say anything.
Yes, they would. All right, Tony, that was an incredible list. We made a sad song and made it better, if I could bring back a Beatles reference. What are we going to do next week for our film? I think it's time for a good, big, fat classic. Like, I'm talking Three's, Close Encounters of the Third. I almost said Three's Company. I'm talking Close Encounters of the Third Kind level. How about Shining?
Wow.
Should we do it?
You want to do The Shining?
Should we do it? We've mentioned it 100 times on the podcast.
It's scary because like so many people talk about this movie. I don't know what we're going to say that hasn't been said, but if people want to hear our talk about it, our take on it and what we feel about it, sure.
What do you think?
Sure. I see that movie every couple of weeks anyway, so...
I know it's a huge one for you. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts. I really am, because I have questions about it. I saw that documentary about it, Room 260.
Room 237.
237.
So
I'm interested in it. I've got questions. I want to talk to you about it, I guess. So it's my own selfish way. I have questions about this film.
Schwarzenegger's not in it. In this movie.
Oh, all right. Scratch that.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't know if you remembered.
He is Arnold.
That's the show out, obviously.
All right. All right.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. For more information, to participate, and even donate, go to our main page, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal. On social media, we're @ratedparanormal. All music is by Andrew Galdens Jr. You can find him on Instagram @kidriga or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
There's a lot of it I couldn't watch.
With the hopes that someday she would understand that I was worthy of loving you.